How are we doing, everybody? And welcome back to the Sean Atwood channel with myself, Ron Swanson, and John Wedger for tonight's episode of Crime Theory. Ron successfully moved his PC earlier, but now needs to move it back because the camera won't bloody stretch to it. So apologies there. I also have a bit of a banger of a headache. So if I'm not as high energy as usual, I apologize. But John, how has your week been? What have you been up to? Fill us in.
Busy. I'm sort of working flat out at the moment. So on that front, a lot's happening. The social media stuff has gone absolutely crazy. I've sort of reinvented myself, awesome. Gone back out. It's gone mad. It's just an amazing amount of things coming up. We're working on our documentary Redemption, and that is really doing well. So we're two episodes in now. We're hopefully filming our third episode next week. And I want to thank anyone who's contributed via the Indiegogo and the Patreon. You've enabled me to carry on. And because of the amount of information I'm getting in, I'm back sort of doing the street podcast again, going out and interviewing people. So hopefully I'll have one next week. And I'm going to be going to Scotland.
Oh, awesome.
To speak out. And what we got tonight, this is your neck of the woods, my friend. And it's different. It's different. This is, we always wonder, we all scratch our heads and wonder, how does the system allow this? How does it allow this abuse? Why are there cover-ups?
Of course.
At what level? We always say, it's high up. We're going high up today.
Okay.
We're going high up. And this will explain a part of the cabal tonight. Wow.
You never fail to deliver, John. So I'm sure tonight will be no different. Make sure you slap a like on this stream, people, and make sure you're subscribed. And who are we talking about tonight, John?
Right. We're talking about one of the aristocracy from your part of the world, Sir Nicholas Fairbairn QC.
Okay.
Right. Let's explain who this guy is. Born the 24th of December, 1933. He died, so he's fair play. We can give this guy a good kick in. He died the 19th of February, 1995. Nicholas Fairbairn went on to become probably the top lawyer in Scotland. He became a Tory MP. He was an MP for Perthshire. We're going to go into this. This guy, you might, what some of the stuff he's got involved with, you might well have heard about him. But we're not picking low hanging fruit here. We're going right to the top of the tree with this guy.
All right.
I was approached by survivors of a kid's home in Perth called Forneithy Home. And Forneithy Children's Home was a Protestant. I'm going to turn up my volume a bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Was a Protestant home for girls, right? It was seen as a respite centre for girls. One woman, she was a victim of abuse during the 1970s in this place. She decided to put online what had happened to her. She thought maybe one or two. She's been inundated with hundreds and hundreds of survivors coming forward. And some of them are reported, well, most of them are reporting the most horrific abuse. And we scratch our heads thinking, how does this go on? People we've spoken about in the past, Brian Fields, Sidney Cook, right? They come from the lower classes. They come from the care system.
Yeah, but they have these connections, though, right? I mean, that's the thing. They're all connected through this web.
We're going to join the dots tonight. And also, we're going to be looking at, years ago, a guy came to me, and he was the son of Lord Montague of Bewley. Okay? The name was Robert Montague. I'll put his name out there because he's written a book about this and he knows.
Okay.
And he said to me, his book is all about the abuse he endured as a result of going to Eton, the factory that produces more posh prime ministers than any other. I think about 13 prime ministers
Okay.
I've been dished out of Eton, the fee-paying school that sort of lines people up for Oxford and Cambridge.
Yep.
In the shadow of Windsor Castle, and famous for the
prestige, shall we
prestige,
say?
Prestige, the fagging system. And he turned around to me and he said, "Look, John, you help the people from the lower and the working classes, but when they come forward and they report abuse, they tend to be at least initially listened to by the police." And maybe it don't go anywhere, but they initially do get their statements taken and they're interviewed. He said, when you come from the ruling classes like me, you don't even get as far as the police. He said, Please spare a thought for us. And again, we've got to look at abusers. Fairbairn was an abuser. And we're going to delve into him and his connections. This is probably the most revealing podcast I've ever done, but we're also going to look at who he was. And, we can draw parallels. So he was rejected by his mother at birth.
Okay.
What sort of a woman rejects their child at birth? The mother was described as an aristocrat.
Okay.
But what does that even mean? An aristocrat. People conjure up these things of being high society and a bit arty or whatever it might be. But this woman, whether she's an aristocrat or not, she's an incredibly cold-hearted, selfish individual. And she rejected her own child. His father was a prominent UK psychoanalyst. Again, we see psychoanalysts crop up. And the main one was a guy called Kinsey, who wrote the Kinsey Report. It was a psychoanalyst who wrote a report along with, who's the other guy? Famous. It was, is someone on to become an MP? Comes to me in a minute. And he was Freud. Sigmund Freud. You know, Sigmund Freud, again, did some very questionable borderline paedophilic reports. And so did this guy, Kinsey. Kinsey wrote a report on about young 3-year-old girls achieving an orgasm. I mean, and his. His work, Kinsey's work, is still used in some of the social services training manuals. Already, if we look at what happened to Brian Fields, rejected at birth, and something that you know, our friend and prominent child murderer profiler, Corinne Hutstelbot, says that in order to get to the crux of the matter, you've got to look at these people. And see what their relationship was like with their parents, mainly their mother.
Where it's and
the mother. So Brian Fields, again, mother was a prostitute, taken away from his mother, went on to become an incredibly sexually damaged individual. Right. So, and Brian Fields was put in a care. Well, like Robert Montague said to me, we're put into posh. Fee-paying schools, they're no different to the care system.
The atrocities that go on are they just go on and on throughout history. It's shocking.
So we're going to look at what happened to him. He then was placed in a fee-paying school, Loretto School. Now, we have the IICSA, the Independent Child Sexual Abuse Inquiry in the UK. Scotland had the Scottish sexual abuse inquiry run by a lady Smith, and we're going to go on about this woman in a minute. These are all barristers, right? So Nicholas Fairbairn went on to become a barrister. He went to Loretto School. Loretto School was one of a few schools that come under the scrutiny of the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry, right? But every other school was slated monumentally, and a school gained its position on this list because of the abuse that went on. Loretto School is a very, very posh fee-paying school where the elite is a bit like the Scottish Eton, could say.
Okay.
And what happened is it's in Musselburgh. And when Lady Smith did the report on it, we're going to give her a good kick in as well in a minute. She turned around and wouldn't say any negative about it. And she actually, all the comments that she posted on her report, she cut and pasted from their website.
Oh, so,
So can we just think about this one? survivors of the abuse at Loretto School, we're going to go on about what they endured, right? There was cases of children set on fire. There was cases of genital mutilation. There was cases of gang beatings, the R word, nearly the R word, right? Right. Beds urinated and defecated on, right? By other, well, not just by other boys, but also members of staff, right? And general S abuse of boys, right? Older boys were encouraged to do it to the younger boys.
And how long did that go on for? Like, what's the?
I think there's the time scale of this inquiry from the 60s through to the 90s. Right now, we look at, this is what survivors of this school, right? Lady Smith refused to put anything negative, and she cut and pasted comments. So do you really think that Loretto School, when it's selling itself online, on their online school brochure, would put on it about, at this school, we genitally mutilate boys, we set them on fire, we are them.
Yeah.
We beatings. We urinate on their beds.
Oh.
Of course not. She refused to put anything on there. Now this lad, so Nicholas Fairbairn, right, born into high society, mother is some weird nutcase aristocrat who abandons him, rejects him. So this boy has instantly got demons of rejection and abandonment. We know what happens there. He goes to a well-renowned, infamous, upper-class society school where genital mutilations, gang beatings, R's,
yeah,
urinating on beds, defecation, kids being set on fire, thrashings, beatings are commonplace. So we can only imagine.
I mean, how do you cover up people being set on fire? It's kind of mind-blowing.
But they did. And then when it's given to a government official, a QC, someone of high legal esteem to look into this, she was in place for 8 years looking into this inquiry. Heaven knows what her wage was. So she's probably given an open checkbook. She was criticised for going way over the budget, right? In 8 years, she did not find one recommendation put forward to change how children are dealt with in care, not one. When you look at the UK one, the English one, yeah, Ireland and whatever, there was pages and pages, and five of them recommendations were due to my evidence. So power here. But
well done.
Yeah, and that was to do with safeguarding children in care. She did not find one. And bear in mind the evidence of what we've just had, genital mutilations, kids set on fire, blah, blah, blah.
So how have they managed to conceal all that? Take us through.
Well, we're going to get to this. And this is the bottom end of the wedge, right? He then attends Edinburgh University, the Scottish equivalent,
yep,
of Oxford, I presume. He becomes Scotland's youngest ever QC. Right, again, we're going to draw parallels here. If we look at allegations that were made against our Home Secretary under Thatcher's government, Leon Britton, he became the youngest ever, the youngest ever Home Secretary, right? Okay. At a very young age. But again, many, many allegations are made against this guy.
Yeah.
So then he gets, in 1974, he's elected as an MP for the Tory party, and he gets Perth and Kinross. Right, he becomes in 1979 Margaret Thatcher's Solicitor General for Scotland. So he becomes a Premier Solicitor General for Thatcher's government in 1979.
Yeah, and he's paved his way, and he's just climbing the ladder.
Right, he becomes a Tory MP and a vociferous opponent of gay rights. Right, so we got to bear this in mind. Right. We're going to revisit this in a minute, right? So he becomes a Tory MP, in 1979, he's made this Solicitor General. He's an outspoken, vociferous opponent of gay rights. Now, we're going deep now.
Okay.
During his time in Thatcher's cabinet, he has a long-standing affair with no other than Esther Ranson.
Esther Ranson, okay.
Now,
I remember Esther Ranson.
What did Esther Ranson set up during her time, during this period of time? Childline.
Childline, okay, yep.
And bear in mind, I've said this many times on Mr. Sean Atwood's show, that when I was a detective in one of the busiest child abuse units in the UK, we only ever, in the time I was there, the years I was there, we only ever had one referral from Childline, one.
Yeah.
Thousands of kids would have rang, one. Right, so bear in mind, we've got to think of this. He also made and got away with several sexual advances towards Margaret Thatcher. This is a very sick puppy, this guy, you know. He also had such leverage. He would try and manipulate the press, and he wanted to prevent them from having like the freedom and the autonomy that they had. So yeah. Even back in this, he tried to curtail the press, right? So he wasn't a fan of the press, but why would you do that? And we're going to find out. We're going to find out.
Okay.
Right. Now, Scotland had a Dame Anne Leslie. I don't know what her role was, but she was a dame and she was high up in Scottish politics. And she made an allegation that during BBC Four's current affairs show, Any Questions, right, Fairbairn was sexually groping her during the live show. Right. She actually went out to speak out about this and he tried to sort of get it all sort of omitted from the press. Right.
Okay.
He was asked, so he went, he came to this high prominence in 1979. That didn't last long because in 1982, Thatcher was so professionally embarrassed by this guy's shenanigans, right? He was asked to step down as Solicitor General due to his, his role as a notorious adulterer.
Promiscuous ways,
right? So I just want to recap with this guy because I don't want nothing to slip through the net. So we look at his early years.
Go ahead.
Damaged.
Sorry, John, I lost you for a second there. Carry on.
Yeah, emotionally damaged individual goes abandoned by his mother, ends up at a infamous school for child abuse, in which I no doubt he was both a victim and a perpetrator. No evidence of that, but I'm just saying. Very prominent, active, outspoken, says a vociferous opponent of gay rights. Had an affair with Esther Ranson, who sets up Childline, a well-known adulterer, made sex advances to Thatcher.
Wow.
Worked that one out. Groped other female MPs. A bit like Savile, you know, where he was groping girls on Top of the Pops. He was doing this on Any Questions, BBC4's thing, right? However, right, there's missing times here. There's missing periods of time. So...
All right.
We've gone straight from him leaving Edinburgh University straight to him joining, becoming a QC and joining Thatcher's cabinet. He's missing years, and this is the period of the 1960s when he's in his heyday. So in 1960, he was chairman of Edinburgh's left wing Traverse Theatre. Right, Traverse Theatre was an active radical theatre for Edinburgh's gay community.
Yep.
Now, he was chairman of that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a major conflict when he gets into power. So he's in his 60s, he's in a left-wing pro-gay activist theatre group, right?
Okay.
He was an active and honorary member of a radical gay liberation organisation in Scotland called the SMG, the Scottish Minorities Group. So this guy... It seems to be a different beast to what we get in the 70s. So in the 60s, this guy is very active, very outspoken, not against gays, but pro-gays. So the inference here is this man is gay, right? And he's going hell for leather for the up-and-coming left-wing pro-gay. Because, the political environment would have been, landscape would have been very different towards homosexuality back then. And I think it was probably still illegal. Right. So he was an honorary member and a very active honorary member of this SMG, the Scottish Minorities Group. Who was running the Scottish Minorities Group? A guy called Ian Dunn. So he was in close with Ian Dunn. Now, Ian Dunn might not mean anything, but just prior to this guy, Fairbairn, joining the Tory party, In 1974, Ian Dunn sets up Pi, a paedophile information exchange. Oh,
man, that is grim.
Mate, we can see where this is going.
Yeah.
There was problems with the Traverse Theatre because Fairbairn was constantly making sexual advances to young male actors. What is going on with this guy?
Well, I think we know.
You know, and the next thing is this massive sort of, womanizer and all that. But a decade before, very active homosexual, you know?
Yeah.
And he was classed as being a highly promiscuous gay activist.
Okay.
Right? You know, this guy he's flipping both sides of the coin here.
Okay.
Okay, now this gets better. In 1982, the 7th of June, right, an MP from Scotland signs in, right, to use the sauna and to abuse boys in the sauna.
Jesus.
Of an infamous South London guest house called. Right.
Oh, you're back. Say that. The name of the guest house again and carry on.
Right. There was a big scandal in the 80s. Of a rent boy racket in an called Elm Guest House.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Right, three MPs were named. Sir Peter Morrison, Cyril Smith, and Nicholas Fairbairn. Nicholas Fairbairn was named as being, what would you call it? A user, an attendee of this. Of this gay liaison place.
Okay.
And the information was that he would use young boys in the sauna. Okay. And evidence was gathered from the infamous list that went on to form a big government inquiry. It comes to me in a minute. A major inquiry in which many, many politicians were named and leading actors and all sorts.
Yeah.
And on that list is Nicholas Fairbairn. Okay. So he's at this time, it's 1982. So we jump from his gay shenanigans in the 60s to his womanizing in the 70s, molestation in the 70s to his use of young boys, underage boys, most of them that come from the care homes.
It's freaking crazy.
Yeah. Really and he's linked him with Cyril Smith, Sir Peter Morrison, very, very well known, right? And I think Sir Peter Morrison was something to do with the social services. And he's also having an affair with a person who set up Childline, Esther Anson.
Yeah, that's the Childline thing is concerning.
Now, the recent inquiry, right, into Fornithy Girls Home, right? The girl said that they would be drugged and they'll be taken to a posh house and there will be men that smelt of tobacco and pipes and cigars and all that. The girls are made to walk around in just a bra. Young girls, we're talking little primary school up with those girls. And they would be abused and R'd. We know what the R word. So this was PDF files that were in now. Right, the girls, 15 girls were interviewed and shown pictures of abusers. Out of the 15, six of them pointed out their abuser as being Sir Nicholas Fairbairn QC. Okay. Sir Nicholas Fairbairn QC was then later accused of R-ing a girl from the age of 4. And this girl was the daughter of the second most prominent QC in Scotland, a man called Bob Henderson QC. Now, that may or may not mean anything to you just yet, but I'm sure this will come. Who is Bob Henderson? Fairbairn and Bob Henderson.
Okay.
They called him AKA Shiny Bob. And I'll explain reason who this guy is. Right. Now, Fairbairn's roles. He was a Conservative Member of Parliament for Perthshire. He was Solicitor General for Scotland. His duties were to advise the Scottish government. He was responsible for the Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal, the CPS of Scotland. He was their advisor. He was a senior advisor to the government, not the Scottish government, the government. And the roles, his roles, what come under his jurisdiction was to investigate and prosecute criminal offences, as well as sudden deaths and suspicious deaths. It was his final say what happened to investigations, murders, deaths, and sudden deaths. Okay?
Okay.
And there was an investigation was started on for wrongdoing for Nicholas Fairbairn and for Bob Henderson, both QCs, right?
It was later
dropped, the investigation, and a Labour Party MP, the justice spokesman at the time was a man called Graham Perron, asked why any findings, why they were shut down, and he said that these findings, what they did have, showed powerful persons were involved.
Yeah. I mean, right? There's no other way of explaining it.
You know, so we're getting into very, very murky territory now. You know, we're sort of really moving forward, right? Into who this fella is, right? Now, his colleague, his buddy, his oppo, is running pal, Bob Henderson QC, a.k.a. Shiny Bob, born the 29th of March 1937, and he died the 9th of December 2012. Again, we're going to give this guy a good kick, and he deserves it. This man is a PDF file, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, born in Glasgow, and what happened to him? Sent to a boarding school. Right. This is where he became an associate and a close friend of Nicholas Fairbairn. He worked as a junior partner for a law firm called Burnett Walker. And the firm did get investigated and suspected of fraud, mortgage fraud, money laundering, and money laundering for the mafia. And he was a senior partner for it, okay? The other senior partner was a guy called Ian Walker. And during the investigation, the Sun newspaper got involved. And halfway through it, Walker hung himself outside his office.
Something was going on there.
So this does start tying in very nicely with these care homes in a minute. There was another investigation going. It's always going on at the same time. This is throughout the 80s now. There was an investigation called the Magic Circle, and it involved the Scottish justice system. Right. It initially started off with the gay scene in Edinburgh and judges that were circuit judges, Crown Court judges were involved, because back then it was outlawed. All right.
Yeah.
But it soon moved on to rent boy rackets. And it was the solicitors and the judges and the QCs that were involved in rent boys. Right. And it was massively, massively covered up. Now, one of the guys was a guy called Colin Tucker. Barrister again went on trial for fraud, and Tucker was actually being blackmailed by persons unknown for being gay. So Tucker then, under the instructions of his barrister Bob Henderson, was asked to write a list of all the other barristers involved. It got known as Tucker's List.
Okay.
And it was a list of all Tucker's lists, yeah. And as a result of this list, the senior judge for Scotland at the time, Lord De Vere.
Lord De Vere,
you know, the judge, recorder, whatever, one of the top ones in Scotland, he resigned. And there were five other senior judges in Edinburgh and in the environs that were on this list.
Okay.
And Bob Henderson, used this because he had very strong connections high up in the police to blackmail people. He went on a huge blackmailing spree armed with this information. Okay. And it linked him with judges and criminals. And as a result, he managed to manipulate the system and get everyone to help him out. So he's a really nasty, spiteful piece of work.
Yeah.
And Bob Henderson was pimping out his 4-year-old daughter to other barristers, one of which is Nicholas Fairbairn.
Jesus.
Now, he's a top QC. he's given the job of representing another barrister involved in rent boy rackets. He's given the job of it. And with that information, he can now start bribing police officers, criminals, other judges.
And of course. I mean, it's the definition of rising to the top in this syndicate, in this group.
And a young girl went missing and was never seen again. And she was linked to a place, a street in central Edinburgh called Palmerston Place. And Palmerston Place was the epicentre of this rent boy racket. Henderson was also accused of running brothels and involved in doing likewise with Nicholas Fairbairn. So what sort of dogs are we caught up with, you know, here? But the police did look into it. And there's a very, very brave officer. It went known as Operation Planet. And it was looking at boys from care homes and runaways, right? Nine of these boys gave statements, right, as to what was going on. Out of the nine, five died suspiciously. Five out of the nine.
I don't even know what to say to that, John. Like, I mean, how has this gone on for so long? Like,
But look at what I was dealing with when I was in the Metropolitan Police. It's the same thing.
Of course it is.
And I was told by a senior officer, shut the F up. You don't know who or what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then I was told by someone else, this goes right to the top. And I think we're near to the top with this.
I think we're pretty much as far as we can get, mate. You know, I mean, it's...
Listen, there's a bit more I need to go through, but...
Yeah,
when
of course.
We're looking at the scale of S abuse in children's homes in Scotland... And it was given to Lady Smith. I'm going to go on about her to look at. Lady Smith was friends with these people. She didn't, after 8 years, make one recommendation. The school where kids were genitally mutilated and gang-ard and gang-beaten and urinated on. And you know, there was one account where there was a hole dug full of excrement and urine and kids were regularly shoved into it. Instead of publishing the findings of that, she published the comments, the positive comments from their website. And kids were dying. So when we say, oh, they're all covering it up, this is the people covering it up.
Yeah.
Right? Henderson would hold parties and pass his young daughter around. Susie. And another guy that was involved was a guy called Watt. What's his other name? Something Watt. Was it John Watt? Right. Now, this gets interesting. John Watt, another solicitor, barrister. QC from this elite Edinburgh chambers cesspit, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
What not only was a good friend of Henderson, and he also was molesting and R-ing Henderson's young daughter, Susie, he also was abusing young boys, and he abused and he R'd a young boy called Mark Thompson. And Mark Thompson bravely did come forward, and so did Susie Henderson. And there was four victims of what? Four child victims of what? So the guy's a PDF file.
Yeah.
And he was given 10 years for what he did. Henderson got away with it. 10 years he was given. Now, what's interesting is there's another senior judge called Lord Hardy. And Andrew Rutherford Hardy, Baron Hardy, Lord Hardy, born 1946, advocate depute, head of the CPS from 1979 to 1983. He was head of the chambers where John Watt, who's Henderson's best mate and friends with Rutherford, and John Watt, another barrister, was abusing little Susie and this poor lad and two other kids.
It is just rife. It's the top echelons.
Well, this is really weird, right? Because a report was sent through to Lord Hardy and told this is what's going on.
Yeah.
He concealed it. He covered it up. But he was like the mentor, right?
Okay.
The trainer of John Watt. I don't know if anyone in the legal world might know this. Guess what they call a senior barrister who sort of puppy walks and mentors the younger ones? Their official term is the devil master.
We're in the in plain sight realm now, rubbing it in your face in plain sight. You know what I'm saying?
The Devil Master. That's his official term because he trains other barristers. He's known as the Devil Master. And listen, this is something, look, this is really strange. This is some of the investigations that come out. This is feudal. Yes, this is archaic, right? Hardy, Lord Hardy, was his, because he was the advocate depute for the CPS, and he was the top of the tree. This is as high as you can get in the legal thing. He become the senator, the senator colleague of justice was his term. The senator colleague of justice, right? Okay. Now, that might just be a term, but when you look at it, right, he's covering up child abuse. We don't know if he's an abuser or not. We're not going to go down them lines of saying things we don't know, but we can draw inferences here. But he's covered up, officially concealed, horrific, top of the tree child abuse, and everyone around Lord Hardy is smelling bad as well, right?
Of course.
Now he is Senator. Now, with the rank of Senator Colleague of Justice, it is treason under the Treason Act of 1708, still in place today, to kill Lord Hardy whilst he's in post as a senator in exercise of the office of Scotland. And that's still in force now. Right? Still in force now.
Okay.
So if you kill this guy, it's not murder, it's treason. You'll be hung.
Wow.
You'll be hung. Now, what did Lord Hardy preside over? He was the lead investigator for the Lockerbie inquiry.
Okay.
Now,
it's undeniable when all these individuals are into these things and work in such close proximity. This isn't an accident.
Now, what is weird is the Lockerbie inquiry. I had an informant in the police who was in the Scottish justice system. He was in the prisons, and I used to go to Scotland. I visit quite a lot of prisons in Scotland, and I've done intelligence interviewing there. Right, and I was told about Abdul al-Megrahi.
Okay.
And I was told by this guy that Abdul al-Megrahi never, and they knew it, the system knew it, that he was not the Lockerbie bomber. He was an intelligence asset for the intelligence services. And I said, did he get a hard time? Because he was in Sockton prison, I think.
Yeah.
And he said, no, John, he'd never got a hard time because everyone knew. He said he was a really nice man. And he said, but no one could get near to him. He said, I got near to him because I could get messages to him in the mosque. He would be chaperoned by two guards everywhere he went. But in the mosque, there were sometimes these odd opportunities where you could get near to him.
Okay.
And he said, and everyone liked him. He says, a really nice guy. And they all knew he didn't do it. And he said, he openly said, I was working for the government. I was helping them. And they've stitched me up. You know, and Lord Hardy would have known this, I would have thought. I know it. So yeah, why wouldn't he have known it? So now we're going on to another head of the justice system, a colleague of all of these, a colleague of the whole lot of them, right? She gets given the job to preside over the Scottish Abuse Inquiry. Her name is Lady Smith, right? She's born in the 16th of March, 1955, went to Edinburgh University, as they all do, become a QC in 1993, and she become advocate depute.
Okay.
So she takes on this role, right? In 2000 to 2001, she only lasts a year. And she was also the chairman of the Scottish Partnership on Domestic Abuse during the same period of time. So it's all the cases for domestic violence come her way. And we got to think about this.
Okay. Yeah.
Survivors of abuse have got a propensity to either get caught up in or perpetrate domestic violence, right? Because of the horrors they've been through, right? The damage, the rejection. And domestic violence perpetrators tend to are people that have suffered rejection, especially by the mother. And we found that with Bob Henderson, our piece of the QC, that you know, who used to R his own daughter and get others to do so. He would beat his children and his wife. These are damaged people. So, you know, this woman was in charge of the inquiry where it's also incestuous and linked in, and they have their governance. They're the ones that can open and shut the doors, and they're the deciders whether justice is ever given. And I feel sorry for anyone who comes under the umbrella of these people that are waiting and trusting the Scottish justice system, because it's not going to deliver.
No,
I'm telling you now, you've got people like Lady Smith, right? She tried to bully the BBC, right? Because they were going to expose her as a bully. She had a history of bullying, right? She was up a few times on allegations of bullying. And under her, the BBC were looking at corruption and cover-ups regarding the SCAI, the Scottish Abuse Inquiry.
Okay.
One of our junior members, he was so sick that zero recommendations were made in the 8 years that she was in. So she came up of 8 years of looking at the abuse, which we've seen, which we've just gone through some of it. We'll go for a bit more in a minute.
Yeah.
She came up with zero recommendations. He decided to write a book about it because she tried to bully him into silence because he spoke out. And because the BBC got hold of it, she tried to bully them as well, you know? And yeah. She tried to silence them because this guy who wrote the book, John Halley, was going to expose her, and lo and behold, Lord Hardy as well, as being members of the Scottish senior Scottish establishment there.
Wow.
So, you know, me and you, if we don't pay our congestion charge, our council tax, whatever, we don't stand up for our community service, we go to prison.
Yeah.
Look at this lot, what they're doing. These are the lawmakers, and they are the main lawbreakers, right? So Lady Smith is in charge of the Scottish Abuse Inquiry. Now these people we mentioned, now we've been going on about murderers.
Yeah.
There's no difference in the profile of Nicholas Fairbairn and that of Brian Fields and maybe Sidney Cook. I can't see any difference in them, right?
Okay, I mean, there's a lot of similarity. I mean, like, it's really just upbringing and status that separates them.
Yeah, and one's privileged and one isn't, right? Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. Because of what they've done and the access, the unfettered access they would have had to children in care, how many of those survivors killed themselves? Now, is that not indirect murder, in my opinion, manslaughter?
Of course. You know,
and then when justice is asked for, their pal, Lady Smith, jumps in and they don't get any. And then when the kids go to Childline, to Esther Ranson's beloved Childline, who knows? I mean, we're just drawing parallels here. There is more parallels here to child abuse and institutional, systemic child abuse that we could draw between Sidney Cook, Brian Fields, and all the rest of Perverts United, you know? So I'm just going to go on about the Scottish system. It's different. The Scottish, I've researched this. It's been fascinating. Unlike the English, the Scottish...
Hang on 1 second. My phone's ringing. Just keep going, John.
Okay. Right, I'll carry on. The Scottish did not like children going away from them into boarding schools. The English loved it. The Scottish didn't. Scottish didn't like to divest their children away from the maternal influence. Okay? So, if parents went in prison, Scottish, the children tended to go with them. But they weren't places for children, because if children went into the Scottish prisons in the dark days of the 18th century, they would suffer mental health problems. They weren't really nice places, but the Scottish had a cohesive family mentality, whereas the English tended not to have.
Okay.
But that changed. The religion changed that. The Catholic Church changed it. Now, the Catholic Church didn't have a bigger stronghold as a Protestant church in Scotland.
Okay.
Right. But it had to step in 1840, because there was a massive influx of Catholic kids to Scotland.
All right.
And do you know why?
No, tell me.
The Irish potato famine.
Okay.
The kids legged it.
Of course.
And of course that made sense. So the West Coast, Glasgow, was absolutely inundated with starving Irish kids. And then they were put into these Catholic institutions, right? And so there was things like the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul, the Sisters of Nazareth, the Congregation of Christian Brothers. Doesn't it sound so benevolent
Oh, it sounds, doesn't sound suspicious in the slightest.
Not at all. It warms you inside, doesn't it? Now, these side orders of Catholicism,
yeah,
we just got to follow the money, right? They don't. 80% of all Catholic orders, like St. I want to go on about St. Vincent de Paul because I want to know how things decline, right? Jesus Christ, our Lord, our Savior, he come from Nazareth. And he warned in the book of Matthew, Mark, and Luke that anyone who harms a child, anyone who does it, it is better they put a millstone around their neck and jump into the depths of the sea.
Yeah.
Right? He's telling them, you hurt kids, top yourself. That's what he's saying, Jesus, because he couldn't stand children being hurt. Yet these dogs have piggybacked on his name. They've not just given the kids a hard time. They've gone worse than that. This is where we start to see women who abuse, and we're going to cover that in a very interesting bit in a second. It's highly interesting. It is probably one of the most interesting things I've ever looked at. But these orders, like Vinnie DePaul and the Sisters of Nazareth and the pedo Christian Brothers or whatever, they're interesting because they do not come under the governance of the Vatican. So there is no auditing of these people. There is no adjudication. There is no ombudsman. There's nothing. So they go unfettered. There is no... do you know what I mean? Curtailing of their behavior if it goes awry. They do not get inspected for the whole term of their existence.
Yeah.
And this is dangerous. So,
carry on, John. Sorry.
Right. The Catholic orders, right? I'm going to give you a list of what was reported to them, what kids endured.
Okay.
Regular beatings, daily beatings with leather straps, hairbrushes, and crucifixes. Jesus. I mean, I wear my crucifix, right? Because it reminds me of the suffering of Christ. But unlike the Catholic one, where's mine? You know, he rose again on this one, right? This is a symbol of hope and of love and of faith. They use this to beat little kiddies.
Yeah.
And they're people of God, right? When they did the investigation, when the SEIA actually, not Lady Smith, but her foot soldiers who... I would have thought some would have been ex-coppers and that did a good job. They found that the children experienced no love, no comfort, no compassion, and no dignity. Their abusers were priests, trainee priests, nuns, and staff. So everyone. And there was one, the Smilem Park Orphanage in Lanark, right? They were told, dig up the grounds.
Oh, God.
They dug up the grounds. 400 children's bodies were found.
400.
400. What went on there, right? Right. The Congregation of Christian Brothers, they took it another step forward, right? Under their schools, kids suffered electric shocks, brutal beatings, whippings, pushing into holes filled with urine and excrement, made to eat vomit. One boy, his hand was put in a vice and crushed by one of the brothers. It went gangrenous. It was ignored and eventually it had to be amputated. That was seen as lawful chastisement, you see.
It's just so twisted.
It's so twisted that now, again, we look at the boarding schools. The main one that cropped up, the survivors, was Loretto in Musselburgh. Smith refused to post negative comments. And the public insisted that the remit regarding this school be extended. And both Lady Smith and Nicola Sturgeon stepped in and said, no, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
I mean, but how do the people around these people not, like, attempt to step in? I mean, they just get silenced, I would imagine.
They just get silenced. And if you look at it, the Fornithi home, it was gifted to... the Glasgow City Council in 1963, it was in the middle of rural Perth. If we look at the quarriers' homes in the West Coast, mainly around Glasgow, where this quarrier guy, this philanthropist, that they were made up of philanthropists, doctors, mill owners, merchants, and estate owners, but they were getting funding for the government, right? And of course they didn't. And the poor laws had stepped in and said that any child under 40 needed to be catered for because of, you know, there was an economic slump in the 1880s in Scotland. initially, see, Scotland parents needed consent for whatever did with their kids, because of the church and their intervention. That was later on in the 19th century. That was removed. So the government took over because of the church, and parental consent was no longer needed in Scotland. And Scotland went on to witness some of the worst abuse.
It just shows you how they've used religion as a tool.
Yeah. And they made it sectarian as well. They made it sectarian. So the children were made to work from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. from the ages of five. Yeah. There was a cruel regime, exercise, punishment. The nuns lacked any form of tenderness. Again, they set up things called industrial schools to try and teach the kids trades and all that.
Yeah.
But the same thing happened. That slid. And down, the girls are sent to asylums or what they're called lock hospitals to prevent child prostitution and sexually transmitted diseases. And again, it slid away. And the overall result was that very few kids benefited.
Oh,
the children lost their identities. There was unyielding rules, procedures and regulations. And many, many suffered cruelty and serious abuse of all sorts. And that's the main time. So the inquiry, looked at it from the 60s through the 90s, but it did extend to the 1950s to 2010. And 60% of all reported abuse took place in faith-based institutions. And most of that was S abuse, most of it. The majority of the abusers were men. 90% were men and 10% were women. Now, that doesn't mean that that's what was reported. And there's a reason why women aren't reported. And if I can concentrate on the Forneithy home, really, and the women that went on to abuse, and it's really interesting because women tend to abuse younger victims. Women do not discriminate against gender. And the psyche of an older woman is there's a need for admiration, right? There's a need for it. And they have an exaggerated sense of self-importance. And there's a lot of jealousy. Now, when I spoke with Corinne, I said, Corinne, this is fascinating me, this women abusing. Why? And she said, are you on about institutions? I went, yeah. She said, John, a lot of the nuns, a lot of the women were forced into the convents. They didn't want to go. They were forced in. They suffered badly.
Yeah.
And what happened is they never had children. Okay, there were cases of them having children because there was promiscuity with the priest.
Yeah.
Right. But because they didn't marry, didn't have a normal family life, they were unloved. They took out their hatred on children. And she said the same as the report said, that they picked on young children. And so anything that had life and laughter in it, they were jealous of it. And their hatred was met out. Their misery and hatred, they met out. And if a woman is abused, she's 4.5 to 6 times more likely than a man to abuse her own children and others' children.
Yeah, the statistics are horrifying.
Yeah. And women are more financially driven. Now, this is interesting because these girls in the Forneithy home, these posh white men would come during the day, look round the schools and would point at certain girls and they were picking them out for parties. And, of course, they were paying for it. They were making money out of it. So it was a massive racket, a pimping racket.
Yeah, 100%. And, again, this one sort of blown my mind a bit, John, because it's how these old people all interlink and how this system is well and truly planned out. And you bring it in the religion side as well. It paints a really grim reality. I'm not going to lie.
It's shocking.
It's shocking.
And then you've got the public perception of these places, that these are holy individuals.
Yeah.
These are very near to God. They would never do that.
It's the trust and the manipulation.
The trust and the lies. It's horrific. It's horrific, and especially with women, because they won't report it because people don't think that women would do it and the police wouldn't take these reports seriously. But female offenders are more likely to abuse fostered or adopted children than men are.
Wow.
Female offenders prefer female victims, although they don't tend to discriminate, but they prefer them.
Yeah.
Okay. Female offenders are victims of abuse themselves. Majority of them are victims. With men, it's maybe some aren't, predominantly are, but female abusers would have come from abuse themselves. They are three times more likely to pick on children with disabilities. Okay. And a victim in these homes is twice as likely to be abused by a woman. Isn't that, you know, absolutely, you know, and they reckon when they studied a lot of them, 50% of the women had mental health issues and alcoholism and substance
abuse. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that goes without saying. The statistics are horrific, and it's a lot to take in, John, you know, when you're putting this information forward, because we obviously know about the system we're referring to and the secret PDF file cabal, shall we say.
Yeah.
But it's the undeniability of these stories when you start seeing how many of them are surrounding each other in these high places. It's
incredible. You know, that we can tie in Esther Ransom. We can tie in Margaret Thatcher. Yeah. I mean, the inquiry's already done this. They've already done this.
Yeah.
But if you look at, you know, again, we look at the church and what the nuns did, but what about Esther Ransom? People looked up to her, and she ran. Now we've not made direct allegations against her, you know, and we've been in no position to do so. But if we were to look at guilty by association, it starts to smell. If I was vetting someone, I would say, well, how come you're hanging around with this person? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, that's it.
It's not by chance, you know, this is an ongoing thing and you're still there. And then we look at the level they got to when we look at Lord Hardy, Lady Smith.
Well, it's the top.
Nicholas Fairbairn, they are at Bob Henderson, you know, links with the mafia.
Yeah.
And the access, the unlimited access to children in care. And we look at key accounts like Fornithi. One woman came forward and set up a blog. Within months, hundreds and hundreds were flooded. You know, and with all the Scottish homes,
it tends to be the case when someone steps forward, the floodgates kind of open. Make sure you're smash the like button, people. Make sure you're subscribed. And once again, apologies for about the camera this evening. It will be rectified, and for having to put up with me having a splitting headache. It's been one of those days today, sadly. I need to drink more water.
This has given me a headache. It's giving me heartache. When we talk about how this happened, who are the people at the top? We've done it tonight. We've done it.
And
you know, watch this space with the Scottish care home system, because it's exploding as we talk.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop. We can talk about Fairbairn and Henderson. They're dead. But while they were alive, the huge, huge cover-ups by the institution. There was a very, very, very brave police officer. I can't recall his name. He was a detective. He was exposing all of this, and he was silenced exactly the same way.
It's real, and you're testament to the realities of what happens when good men try and fight the powers that are doing these horrific things. You know, it really is.
I mean, so if you want to look up Operation Planet, the Magic Circle, because it was called the Magic Circle because things would magically disappear, you know. Charlie Orr was the detective. Charlie Orr. Lothian and Borders. What a brave man. O-double-R. What incredible guy. And he stood his ground, threatened exactly the same way as me and many others. Papers missing. It was brilliant. I mean, the BBC did a good documentary on it. They do some good stuff every now and then. But it's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing what went on in Scotland, especially throughout the 70s and the 80s, and with the legal system. It was a very, very dirty place to be. And of course, what do they class these people as? Oh, you know, like Fabinel is an eccentric because he would turn up at Parliament in a kilt.
Yeah.
And his love of malt whiskey. Oh, he's an eccentric, that chap. Yeah,
he's a bit of a character.
Bit of a character, yeah, yeah. Bit of a cad. Yeah, don't trust him with your grandmother. He's a bit of, you know.
Yeah.
These people would stick it in anything. They'd do a plate if it had a crack in it, you know?
Yeah.
They are dogs. And they adjudicate over us. And they cover up. And these are kids that came from the East End of Glasgow. They come from Govan, the Gorbals. And they were put there. They came out of poverty. They went back. No one would believe them anyway, you know. And how many of them went back into these impoverished areas harbouring the baggage of the abuse that they went through, and they went through and committed suicide? I bet it's through the roof. Mental health, drug addiction, medication and suicide, all because of Fairburn and Co. and the Sisters of Nazareth and the Pope's little helpers and who else decided to have a go.
Yeah, it's horrific. And once again, you know, you put this over to us, John, I think we're all going to have to sort of go away and process this one. Because it was massive. And, you know, make sure you guys are subscribed. Make sure you subscribe to John's channel. And John, just before we wind up, is there anything else you want to say on this?
No, you know, go through it. Listen again. Listen again to what we said. You know, don't just do it in one hit. Go back and check out these characters. That's what I do. I check them out, Google them.
Do your own investigation, people. That's exactly it. Shape your own opinion.
These are the cream at the top, and this could have brought down the whole of the Scottish establishment. It could have come crumbling down, and I no doubt the equivalent occurs in the UK, and maybe it goes higher and actually does go to the crown. Who knows? We've definitely seen it with one of the our princes here, how he's linked up high up. So
yeah, well, only time will tell on how much of the truth will surface, and hopefully good men like yourselves and the other officer or continue to fight the fight. And as always, John, thanks so much for being here. And thank you all of you for watching. We've got 200 on YouTube and 535 on Twitter. So big shout out to Twitter tonight. You guys won. I will see you all tomorrow lunchtime for a Royal News Flash. And then in the evening for a Royal Mess with some special guests. So come and check us out. And thank you all for putting up with my poor performance this evening. I'm going to go and eat a packet of Nurofen and pass out. So thank you very much. John, you're a legend. Thank you, everybody in the side chat. And I'll see you all in the next one.